Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, listening to the music of Susanna Hoffs and the Bangles. Why, you ask? Well, Susanna Hoffs will be our guest on the book show. She has a very fun new novel out called The Bird Has Flown, and we will talk to Susanna Hoffs this afternoon at 3 o'clock, and we'll be playing Bangles and Susanna Hoffs music all morning, and I'm very excited about that. So good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. It is what day is it, Jim? It's the 16th. It's the 16th of May. It's 9:15, and we welcome you on this day. I'll tell you, we have a great group. We have a big group, and boy, are they prestigious. So let me introduce everybody to you. Alan Chartok, good morning, sir. How are you?
Here and present.
Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. I'm here. I'm present.
All right. Thank you. Investigative reporter and adjunct professor.
Yeah, I think.
Rosemary Armeo is with us.
I'm happy to be here because someone needs to explain to me why Martha Stewart is going to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine.
So great.
Why is she
great? I commend her.
She has nothing to do with sports. She has nothing to do with swimming.
None of the models had anything to do with sports.
But I don't get it. Sorry. Why does she even want to be on the cover of it?
I think a lot depends on how you define sports.
Right.
Cooking is a sport?
Hostessing? Being a business mogul is a sport. I'm sorry.
A sport, eh?
81 years old. And what I saw wasn't really a swimsuit. It was more like a cover-up.
Yeah, I just totally don't get the thing at all.
I'll admit I didn't see the whole thing.
I think this is mindless feminism, that I have to be happy that an old woman is on the cover, but there's no logic to it, whatever.
So I think they're just trying to tell you that this is to show off swimsuits for women of all ages and not look at that. Mike's holding
so
it up.
Good.
Well, she's beautiful, but again, it's Sports Illustrated.
Right. Well, I think they're showing you that it is about the swimsuits and not material for teenage boys to masturbate to.
You never know.
Whoa.
You never know.
But that's not all they're showing you.
Depends on the teenage
Martha Stewart
boy.
Has
well, that's
cleavage.
True. That is true. All right. Rosemary, you always start us off with a bag. I thank you very much. Catch this. Research professor and Stuart Rice honorary chair at the University of Massachusetts Amherst College of Information and Computer Sciences and faculty associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society. Whoa. I'm sorry, we've run out of time. Fran Berman is in the house. Woo-hoo! Hello, Fran.
Yay! Greetings to everybody in the Pioneer Valley.
Now, Fran was an RPI person, lived in Troy,
and then
left us for a while to go to Harvard, and then lived in Boston, and then went to Amherst, but has stayed with us the whole time, but doesn't get in the studio very much, and we're thrilled you're here.
I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you very much. We love having you here. Then we also have your colleague in crime, Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences, which, by the way, with those two guests, I've just announced to our audience, you'll only understand about 30% of what we discussed this morning.
It goes for the other panelists, too.
When Jim and I are AIs, you'll really be in trouble.
Founding Director of the Future of Computing Institute at RPI, Jim Henler. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good, and I'm happy to say that Fran's title is still longer than mine.
Oh, God.
Slightly.
Yeah.
You know.
Tetherless means you're not tied down.
Give it an hour. Give it an hour, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
I could add the other ones.
Yeah, you should.
I could have those. Welcome, everyone. It is very nice to have you with us. If you would like to be a part of the program, all you got to do is write to us, panel at wamc.org, panel at wamc.org. I will get to all the stories as soon as you see this, Jim. This is my two-party authorization.
Yep.
My authenticator is now being unlocked. And I am going to sign in.
Okay,
and
right.
Now it's going to bring me to the actual screen I need to be at. Thank
that,
you
that
very
That means
much.
That the Russians are not going to give you
no.
The articles for today.
That's right. They
are not going to give them to me either. Although given the first one.
Yeah. So this is, let's talk about the Trump-Russia FBI report. And I will admit, and I'm not proud of this, but I'll admit, I sort of forgot this investigation was even going on. I didn't sort of lost track of this one. I didn't know we were waiting for a report, but apparently we were. So this is the story of the Russia investigation. John Durham, the Trump-era special counsel, who for 4 years has pursued a politically fraught investigation into the Russia inquiry, accused the FBI of having, quote, discounted or willfully ignored material information, unquote, that countered the narrative of collusion between Donald Trump and Russia in a final report made public yesterday. It is a 306-page report. It revealed little substantial new information about the inquiry known as Crossfire Hurricane. Mm. And it failed to produce the kinds of blockbuster revelations accusing the Bureau of politically motivated misconduct that former President Donald Trump and his allies suggested Mr. Durham would uncover. Instead, the report, released without substantive comment or any redactions by Attorney General Merrick Garland, largely recounted previously exposed flaws in the inquiry while concluding that the FBI suffered from confirmation bias and a lack of analytical rigor as it pursued leads about Mr. Trump's ties to Russia. An objective and honest assessment of these strands of information should have caused the FBI to question not only the predication for Crossfire Hurricane, but also to reflect on whether the FBI was being manipulated for political or other purposes, Durham wrote. Unfortunately, it did not. Durham said he was not recommending any wholesale changes to the FBI or to FBI rules for politically sensitive investigations and for national security wiretaps, which have already been tightened in recent years. Rosemary, you want first?
Sure. Big waste of time and money. Sum it up that way. $6.6 million, zero convictions, absolutely no new information about some real faults in the FBI, but those were discovered at the end of 2019 when an inspector general came to the same conclusions about lack of rigor and lack of skepticism when they were looking at reports. It also is an exceedingly misleading document that indicates, the FBI should not have gone after that investigation because of the Steele dossier. It says explicitly in the report, I looked this up, that was not the source of the cause of the investigation. That was with a tip from a high-level official that absolutely was handled in the right way. And yet, despite that, Merrick Garland let the report go untouched, unedited, uncommented upon, unlike Bill Barr, who set this investigation up and ruined the Mueller report and was completely a horrible, unethical. It was just awful. And on top of all this, it does not address many of the issues that the New York Times brought up in a big investigation last year about unethical practices of the prosecutors involved in this case. They tried to get information in ways that were unethical, illegal possibly, didn't bring that up at all, just left it all out. So this was a huge waste of time and money. This is why Democrats should never fear when Republicans say, oh, we're going to go investigate you. Comer from Kentucky has had zero results in going after the Biden family. They're now painting them as some sort of big crime family,
right,
with billions of dollars coming in from foreign countries, yet have not produced any evidence, not a single document. They promised a whole bunch of informants. Now suddenly the informants are lost. It is all a shell. And that's why the Biden administration is absolutely correct to just sit back and let them play themselves out. Go have fun, boys, because you're not showing anything.
Jim? Jim,
I was going to say easy to follow up. Actually, the part that I found interesting was where there's a small section of it, and I haven't read it. I read a summary, but where they say it wasn't treated rigorously, like you know, that they didn't follow up on Hillary Clinton appropriately the way they did with Trump. And so I'm sitting there going like, now, wait a minute. You know, it's like the announcements right before the election, the ridiculousness of the FBI investigation at all, the probably cost the election. And they're sitting there going like, and the FBI was not serious like they were in that case. I mean, come on.
Mike?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, there was credible evidence that the Russians were interfering with the 2016 election, that they were trying to help Trump hurt Hillary. And if that's not a reason to commit FBI resources to chase it down, I don't know what is. It was a legitimate reason to go after the absolutely valid evidence that was there. And the Mueller report documented all that.
You want to remind everybody why this was happening?
Well, I mean, it became apparent even before Election Day that Russian entities supported by the Kremlin were, you know, I should look at my tech folks, but they were basically using bots and social media to kind of flood Americans' Facebook pages and other places with pro-Trump, anti-Hillary rhetoric.
Why did they want Trump?
Well, they didn't want Hillary. Trump and Biden were very friendly. Trump is very favorable to Russia, and it certainly and the other, you know, tactic that Russia uses all over Europe and all over the free world is they want to help create chaos, which they've done quite well. So these were all terrible things that were going on. They should have been investigated. If they were not rigorous enough about some of the evidence that it, you know, that it was leading a different way, I'm sorry. This does not change the fact that the Russians were trying to change the outcome of the 2016 election. And that's wrong. And we need to hold them accountable and make sure that Americans know that.
Well, you know, for years I have raised on this panel and to the great rejection of y'all, the idea of national character. And the question is, do the Russians and their politics have a national character that is predictable in terms of dissonance?
Well, I want to say something about what Mike said, because the Russians during the election did something that was even smarter. And by the way, something that every single or almost every single commercial company does, which is try to figure out who is your audience and target them as precisely as possible. And so what the Russians did is they used all of this data that they had gotten in an inappropriate way. It was supposed to be used for research. They used it for this kind of marketing. It was the whole Cambridge Analytica thing. And what they did is they tried to decide which voters they might be able to persuade. And they targeted those voters with messages. So they did the smart thing. But by the way, the last time you bought a baby monitor or like ironclad cookware or, you know, an air conditioner, you know, they're doing the same thing. Yep. Anything you see on Amazon, they're probably doing the same thing. So this is, you know, what is known these days about as savvy marketing. And so they savvily, is that a word? No. Marketed,
it is now.
You know, the U.S. voting public to try to skew the election. Skewing an election is not a good thing. Is it okay to skew a customer base to want your product? I don't know. So some sense, this is a much bigger issue.
Is that skewing or marketing?
Well, it's marketing, too, and you're right. I mean, in the sense that they tried to skew the election by marketing to the most likely voters.
Right. Yes. But everyone should be doing that, speaking to your base.
Well, this is not
everybody
them
does do
speaking
that.
To
since
their
the
base.
JFK
this is a foreign
election.
Country speaking to Trump's base.
Right. Okay, you know, so
yeah,
no,
a
I understand.
Thing.
Yeah.
Right. So if Russia wanted to buy a TV commercial to put on for any candidate, at the bottom, it would say this, you know, this ad was sponsored by, and if you saw this ad was sponsored by the Kremlin KGB, you know, elect Trump campaign, you might think maybe twice about it, right? Social media, there's no there's no rules about that kind of keeping track. Provenance is the technical term. So there's nothing that says they have to tell you this ad was bought by this company or this Russian guy. You don't get the "my name is Joe Smith and I endorse this"
commercial. But even the even when you do get the name, you know, all of these packs obscure themselves. You know, it's like
true. Right.
You know, but, people, you know, for a better America. Oh, by the way, that's Putin and friends. So
yeah, but see, but we would get someone like Rosemary to go out there and start an
investigation. Yeah, Rosemary's going to do it.
She would trace it down and she would say, "Hey, it turns out that."
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. What a group. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, Fran Berman, and Jim Henler. And we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We are talking about the Durham report, which finds fault with the FBI over the Trump-Russia investigation, and we've been discussing this in the first part of the program. We do have letters, and I'll get to those in just a moment. I guess, Rosemary, to what you were talking about of this being waste of time and money. So once you have a report like this, Merrick Garland doesn't add anything, and what happens?
Put it on a shelf, forget about it, move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's it.
But it becomes, again, it becomes another counter message. You know, it's an alternative that the right can use when someone talks about Mueller report or talks about Russian.
I told you it was a hoax.
Yeah. I mean, all it has to be is an alternative point of view that they can point to.
Well,
that's good enough for people. They don't have to understand any of it. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and should Merrick Garland have done something different?
No. I love that Merrick Garland just sent it in.
No
problems at all.
Okay.
Because it's such a contrast to Barr and the Mueller report. Mm-hmm. And you're right, you know, that it'll be used in a way that it definitely does not, it was not intended, does not say. It will be used incorrectly by Republicans.
Incorrectly.
Oh, it's already being used on some of the really right-wing media, which means you'll soon see it in the sort of mainstream right-wing media, to say, see, this is why the lawsuit with the sexual abuse, this is what, you know, they're saying.
Right.
So in other words, one thing shows up as being maybe not have done right. Therefore, everything is wrong. It's all lies.
Right.
And I mean,
it is maddening, but that's just propaganda. It has nothing to do with the report and the history
that
will be supported by the real report.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Comer is, to me, is much worse. The guy who's coming out with a press conference is saying the whole Biden family is a criminal conspiracy and they're making millions, and he doesn't have one iota of evidence.
Right. Well, he suggests that the Biden family, by instead of saying Hunter Biden made money while Joe Biden was not in the White House, by the way, but because Hunter Biden made money during that period, it goes to the Biden family, suggesting that they're kind of giving it to Biden, you know, and he's enriching himself.
So like if Hunter throws in for a pizza.
Right.
Obviously, you're paying off his dad.
And one of our listeners who debates these issues with me keeps saying, "Well, come on, Rosemary. If you're hearing he's getting hundreds of millions and it's going to the children, you don't think the father's involved in it or knows about it?" And I go, "Okay, name one other family that does that." So I said, "Okay, the Kardashians, Trump, the Kennedys, all rich families do this."
Well, yeah,
and it may be illegal, but there's no law against it. Maybe it ought to be.
So here's the question. If one of your children, okay, these are not my children, end up being a serial killer, like, can you not run for president, really, legitimately? I mean, really, how responsible are you for family members? How responsible are you?
Well, it reflects on you. I mean, whether you're the cause of something or what your role was in the behavior of your children, and it still reflects on people.
I mean, Jimmy Carter had trouble with Billy because he was an
Clinton
alcoholic.
Clinton had trouble with his idiot brother. However, my
Roger
views
Clinton,
on this have changed after Ginny Thomas and Clarence. Yes. Now I'm thinking, no, maybe there better be a stronger connection than we've made.
Yeah,
and one does have a connection to the other. And I think it's legitimate in Hunter Biden to investigate his. I think his dealings are completely shady. And if the father was involved, that's legit, too. But to have him proved anything yet.
Right. But Comer also, by invoking the family, suggesting, you know, something that's not really there, he also says it in the present tense. And it was in the past tense that they're looking at.
Good point.
Quite a ways back. But it's rhetoric, and it's very effective rhetoric that lets people listen to a little of it and say, yeah, you know, and then move on. They don't, you know, it's the counter message.
All right, we have letters, so let's go to those. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org.
Do you have a letter from Hunter Biden?
Not yet.
Okay.
I got to check the laptop. It was always about Ukraine, right, Susan? Trump hated NATO and almost killed it. Putin knew that. He would have preferred 8 years of weakening NATO, but he only got four. As soon as Trump was out, he had to act soon to invade Ukraine before NATO got its strength back.
Huh.
Well, that backfired on him because NATO's stronger than ever, bigger than ever.
Larger. Yeah, I mean, they've gained members.
This letter from Paul. The Mueller investigation pointed out that, one, Trump's campaign chairman was meeting regularly with a Russian spy and giving him their inside campaign research and strategy.
Yep.
Two,
that's true.
The Trump campaign knew that the Russians had hacked the Democratic National Committee before that was publicly known. And three, candidate Trump was retweeting Russian propaganda. All of these, though not illegal, warranted concern and an investigation.
Correct. Nice letter, Paul.
Yes, very nice, Paul. We go to Frank. This is why most of the American people don't trust the mainstream media, because you people.
Uh-oh.
Are all hypocrites. By the way, I would just like to say that only four out of the six would be media, and the other two are scientists.
But we're all
real
smart.
Real hypocrites.
And we're right, and you're wrong.
We can still be all hypocrites.
That's... Okay. What are we hypocritical
this
about?
Had nothing to do with Donald Trump, but you can admit it. It was Hillary Clinton, and it was bought and paid for by her.
Are we talking about the Steele dossier?
Yes.
Okay.
Can I just say I apologize for saying this, I turned completely off at the term you people. This makes me crazy when someone says all X are horrible. You know, it's like if there's more than two people in X, you cannot say that. And I hate this term you people. In fact, Rosemary, you and I
do it
got
all the time. I know we got into a fight over this last time. I do that as a generalization.
I just think you cannot stamp everyone with a giant broad brush. You can't do it.
Well, I think you can. I think you can. And the comment here is that the media is doing a bad job. That's what I'm interpreting the letter to say that. And there is something to the fact. I mean, the liberals hated the FBI all during the 60s and 70s. I mean, the FBI does not warrant our unjustified allegiance and faith. It was if he had come up with something.
J. Edgar Hoover.
Right. If Durham had come out with something that said the FBI did this or systematically doing that, then I would be leading the charge here to say this is serious and we have to do something about it. But what you have here is this almost $7 million hoax. This really was a witch hunt. And they found zip. And that's why it's so amazing.
All right, let's go to this letter from Marie. Don't forget that Durham and Barr traveled to Italy together, unethical in itself, in search of evidence to further Durham's investigation, and had two meetings with Italian intelligence agencies who offered them evidence of suspected financial Trump crimes, which Durham and Barr did not pursue. So what's your point, Marie? No. And then we go to John. Let's not forget that several people were found guilty or pleaded guilty as a result of these investigations, and that it is a fact that the Russians did interfere in the election in favor of the Orange Menace. To whine that the investigation started inappropriately is simply partisan obfuscation. Anyone on that? Okay.
Could be.
Those are good terms, partisan obfuscation.
Obfuscation, yes. I like
just the way you read the letters from people that oppose you shows that the letter writer is correct. No thinking person trusts the media. I tend to put a spin on it. I admit that, but they're fun to read that way.
Next time you could read it with an accent.
By the way, I don't think it has any. All I'm reading is righteous indignation. It can be on either side. I don't care about that. Yeah. I just like to, yes. There was an old Steve Allen bit that he used to do that, and that's all I'm parroting. I'm just doing an old Steve Allen bit.
We will never replace you with ChatGPT.
Thank you. Then we go to this. None of it is equivalent. Repeat after me. Not equivalent. Simple message. I don't know exactly what they're saying there.
What's not equivalent to what? Sorry,
I agree with you. What is not equivalent to what?
Good morning, panel. It is really so affable to listen to you all get tongue-tied and tell 30 different reasons why there is no link between Russia and Trump. It was all made up by the one-sided Democratic media, just like this station that I'm forced to listen to, LOL. I know I'm not forced to.
I have to let go of his arm.
But yeah. I listen to anyway, because I need to hear all your lies that you are told every day. But it's very laughable to listen to you all try to explain cover-ups for lies that you talked about daily, every single day, that it was gospel that he was in with Russia when half the people in the United States knew the whole time it was bogus and it wasn't true, and you can't even say sorry. Jesus. You just make up more excuses. It's so sad. Page two. How bad the media at both sides has gotten so one-sided that you can't even admit when you're wrong. Love you. Have a great day. Mike.
I love the sign off.
Mike contributes to WAMC. We're happy.
Why does Mike have to listen?
Why does Mike have to laugh at us?
Okay.
We're
provocative.
Please be sure to send Mike a letter during fundraising.
I read that to mean that he listens to us the way perhaps many on the left would watch Fox, just to check in and see what the other side is saying.
Fear and horror.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back. We have much more to discuss. We'll do just that. Panel@WAMC.org is where you can write to us. We'll return right after this. Walk like an Egyptian. Susanna Hoffs, she'll be our guest later on in book show time at 3 o'clock to discuss her new novel, The Bird Has Flown, which seems to certainly describe a lot of things this morning. We have a new topic I want to get to this morning, and then we have a great group. Alan, Mike, Rosemary, Fran, Berman, and Jim Henler all here. Fran is joining us from Northampton, Massachusetts, and we are more than a little thrilled that she is with us in studio.
Yay!
Let's go to... I'm just trying to figure out how I get to the topic list again.
That's what I think we're doing.
What is it? Oh, here, let me see the.
I think you're doing these.
Because I can't find it.
We'd switch to paper.
Yes, this is good.
Retro tech.
I can't get my.
I think we're doing those.
Yes. So let's talk about the governor of the state of Florida, Ron DeSantis, and. There's two stories, and I think I'd like to start with the one about him signing a bill to defund DEI programs at Florida's public colleges, joining a national wave of conservative attacks on programs that promote diversity in higher education. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a bill into law Monday to defund such efforts at the state's public colleges and limit how race can be discussed in many courses. Critics of the new law worry it is trampling on academic freedom and could hurt efforts they say are critical to serving increasingly diverse student populations. But DeSantis and other opponents of diversity, equity, and inclusion programs say they reinforce racial divisions and promote liberal orthodoxy. Here is a DeSantis quote. If you look at the way this has actually been implemented across the country, DEI is better viewed as standing for discrimination, exclusion, and indoctrination. He said this at the New College of Florida in Sarasota, and that has no place in our public institutions. The bill says the whole experiment with DEI is coming to an end in the state of Florida.
So just to add a few interesting comments here, right? There is a little tiny clause at the bottom of that article that mentions that, by the way, where this contradicts federal rules, the right. feds win. By the way, the feds say all of this is wrong. You can't do any of that. Mm-hmm. So Title IX cover and some of these others. So if they're taking any government money, which no university these days can exist without, this becomes somewhat moot. So again, it's just a pure propaganda piece. That said, I've actually, you know, really enjoy what DeSantis is doing down in Florida because it's made our hiring up here much easier. Man, the challenge of getting people, you know, hired into...
My mouth was falling open in disbelief until you added that ending.
Yeah, no, I mean, at RPI, hiring great people because, you know, we used to compete with a lot of schools in red states who people are telling us, I don't want to live there.
It's scary.
So, maybe it is because we are in this liberal northern DEI approving university. Yeah. But you know what? I'm happy to be there.
It's interesting because DeSantis, to me, seems to be on his way to making Florida his version of China. So think about the Chinese system where there is very tight coupling between the public and the private sector. So you only want companies that kind of do the party line. There is more than Western tastes would allow censorship and control of the population. It's not just putting incentives to do things you would like them to do. It puts penalties in the system to do things you don't like them to do. So this whole thing about higher education in Florida really looking very different than higher education in any other state or in most other states is kind of mind-boggling.
I think the whole thing is a campaign strategy. He wants to distinguish himself from Trump without criticizing Trump. And so he's taken on a whole new set of policies that are conservative. Trump crowd approves of it, but Trump has no real say in it. And he doesn't give a hoot about what Disney is saying. He doesn't give a hoot about gays or gay marriage or any of that. I think it's all to create a lot of hubbub over issues, culture issues, rather than economics or trade or the sorts of things that Trump was
involved
with.
So can I ask a question?
Wait, I just want to also, and I think Jim hit on a key point of this, is that none of it really counts. Because the minute any one of these issues gets challenged, even with the rigged, illegitimate Supreme Court we have now, they cannot be upheld. They're absolutely anti-constitutional.
So I read a rather lengthy article, and I think it was in the Washington Post over the weekend, about DeSantis and how the campaign is sputtering. And
the front page of the Times.
It was the Times. Okay, it was the New York Times. Yeah. And how it's sputtering, and they don't know. It seems like everything, they lost a lot of time. They thought they had this time, 2 months to sort of really make hay while Trump was seemingly sputtering. And then they sort of came out of the stupor. What surprises me is that you have that kind of thing and a strategy that, at least by the account of that article, but it seems also reinforced by many Republicans and donors who say, we don't like what we see, and yet you do more of it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that he's trying to dog whistle. As one of the people quoted in this story today by the Washington Post said, he's dog whistling to the people who are fearing white replacement, a bogus theory that, you know, there's a whole plot to replace the white people in America with brown and black people and people who are diverse. And this is, the diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, that is a good way to get all these other people in and push out the white people. And it's a fear that has been stoked by QAnon. It's been stoked by Fox News. It's been disproven. And we are, I don't want to say that we're a melting pot, but we're a very diverse country, more diverse than just about any place on the planet. And that ordinarily it's not a problem, but now it's scaring some people, and he's appealing to those people. I mean, it's clearly what he's doing.
But let's think about this, because he's not just optimizing his campaign for his own base. He can't sign a bill that the legislature hasn't passed.
Yeah.
And so if you think about, you know, this whole governmental structure in Florida, it's really kind of, it's not just DeSantis, it's sort of remaking it along these very controlling autocratic lines. And, you know, that is really scary.
It is. I agree.
So what is it about Florida that allows this to happen?
Is
there something
unique?
About
Florida?
Yes, there's something unique.
The Republican Party there is extremely strong and well-organized. You saw that going back to Jeb Bush, where when his brother was in trouble running the presidency, he snapped his organization into place, and they all fell into line. The legislature is overwhelmingly not just Republican, but pro-Bush then and now pro.
But you wouldn't call Jeb Bush reactionary, would you? Because people didn't.
No. Yeah.
Well, he looks pretty good in retrospect.
He does, yeah. I mean, I'd love to have him now compared to what we have. But what I'm talking about is the machinery of that Republican organization in Florida. It has always been powerful and in lockstep.
So where does it go if you're just, because it seems like it's one outrageous thing after another.
With DeSantis.
Yes.
Yeah. So is he alienating the moderate Republicans and the non-Trump Republicans?
There aren't any of them anymore.
Well,
it seems
like we also asked this question months ago, where we said, okay, but how does this message going to go when he takes it out of Florida and brings it on the road? And with the exception of Iowa, according to that Times article, it isn't going especially well. Mm-hmm.
There are 19 other states, though, that have laws very much like what he's passing now to put the clamp on woke policies in
critical race theory.
He has picked policies that resonate across the country. It's so planned.
With some people across the country.
It's planned to a particular base.
Yeah.
With the people he needs to win the nomination.
But I'll tell you, the one that I find interesting is this is a guy who's 44 years old.
Yeah. Are we talking
right? 4 years from now.
A kid.
You're not likely to have an incumbent in the White House. Right? It just seems strange to me that DeSantis has decided that now is his time, at a time when Trump seems to be so much stronger than he should be. I don't know if DeSantis is just hoping Trump will get arrested on, you know, that one of these charges against Trump will actually hurt him or something. But I frankly find him a lot scarier than Trump. But that's
scary.
I think he is a full-fledged fascist.
I think he has not decided whether it's time or not. He's playing it very cagey. He can always just say, no, you know, you thought I was going to run. I never said I was. And he's waiting to see if one of the legal hooks.
Spending time in Iowa.
Well, he's got a book out, Joe. How come he's not on the book show?
You know, well, because all of those events in Des Moines are much more important.
I understand.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll talk about the other DeSantis story, which is also interesting, about taking on the mouse that roared. The
House of the Mouse.
The House of the Mouse. Taking on Disney and the toe-to-toe between Ron DeSantis and Bob Iger, the CEO of the Disney Corporation. We'll talk about that. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, Fran Berman, and Jim Henler making up the group. We welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org. All of that fun awaiting you, but first, the fun of Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have a great group this morning. Let me introduce them all to you once again, and we'll get back to our topic. We're going to move on to a different phase of the same topic. Alan Chartok is here, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, Jim Henler, and Fran Berman is here, and
Whoa.
We are thrilled because...
Over from that other state.
They're sorry already.
Fran usually joins us via the phone from the Commonwealth, and she is here in studio, and we're more than a little delighted, so that will be very fun. Okay, well, let's get to the other story. And by the way, we welcome your letters on all of these, and would like to hear from you. My the first story we talked about had to do with the with DeSantis and what he was doing as far as DEI and the DEI programs in the state. But I also do want to talk about the fight with the Walt Disney Corporation. This is, according to the Washington Post, the business section of the Post today says, DeSantis might have met his match in Disney's Bob Iger as both sides dig in. And this, we've talked about this before, this overall issue, but we're going to talk about it again. The mouse brought in the big guns, a former Democratic state senator said. So all of this has been going on, and what now Bob Iger, who was sitting on the sidelines watching Florida lawmakers consider a new piece of legislation called Parental Rights and Education Bill. Critics had already labeled it Don't Say Gay because the bill would prohibit classroom discussions involving sexual orientation and gender identity in early grades. The bill seemed to have little to do with Disney's theme parks in Orlando. Still, Disney's army of lobbyists in Florida kept an eye on that legislation. The risk to Disney appeared so remote the top executives at Disney's headquarters in Burbank, California, were still largely in the dark about the issue, according to a person familiar with the company's thinking who spoke on the condition of anonymity. It was on no one's radar, said this person. Then on February 22, 2022, Bob Iger, tweeted, "If passed, this bill will put vulnerable young LGBTQ people in jeopardy." And then we're off to the races. Iger's tweet caught many in the Florida government and Disney's headquarters by surprise. It suddenly set in motion an epic clash between two Florida powerhouses, Governor Ron DeSantis and Disney World, an economic engine that employs 75,000 people, attracts 50 million visitors per year. The dispute began with a contentious education bill, but like a Magic Kingdom roller coaster, has taken numerous twists and turns in the last 15 months, picking up speed and intensity along the way. What started as DeSantis versus Disney is now seen by many as DeSantis versus Iger. The stakes for both sides seem higher than ever. DeSantis is eyeing a run for the White House. He often needles Disney in his speeches. Iger is back in control at Disney after seeing its share price drop 40% in his absence. The spat with DeSantis had become a major distraction for Iger as he tries to revive Disney's fortunes, according to a former company official. And Disney recently sued the DeSantis administration, claiming the company is the victim of a targeted campaign of government retaliation.
I love Bob Iger. I love that he's taken this on. I don't love Disney. They're a big corporation and deserve, you know, they actually are acting like they're special and don't have to be subjected to the same rules in Florida. They have not been up to now. It's not an absolutely ridiculous argument that DeSantis is making. However, he has erred. He has made it all about revenge for Don't Say Gay, and he is going to lose in court because of that. And Iger's smart enough to know it. He has taken on a formidable foe. I hope he prevails.
Could you explain it? In other words, why is this such poison?
Why is it such poison?
Yes.
Well, DeSantis is again. He is campaigning on cultural issues, and he's saying it isn't up to Disney to say how we treat our gay citizens. He wants to treat them badly, and Disney is saying that's not a good idea. So obviously, as a liberal, we are on Disney's side on that. However, DeSantis is not wrong in saying Disney has unusual advantages and rewards and privileges in Florida, and so he wants to take them away and make them like everybody else. If that were all he was doing, that was fine, but he has made it clear that his intentions were to pay them back. So if I were Disney, I think Iger's next step, I would be surprised if he isn't doing that, is to begin studying what would it cost to pull out of Florida and move the Disney operation to North Carolina has welcomed them, or to any other state in the union, which would love to have the 75,000 jobs, the millions of dollars of tourist money that comes in, all of the infrastructure, the tax relief. they are a huge prize in Florida, and DeSantis' campaign is costing Floridians money. That has got to come back to hurt him.
Costing the money in two ways, right? One being the anything that it does to mess up tourism of the 50 million people who come to Disney World every year.
Yep.
But also through a lot of these policies that you're throwing onto the people who live around Disney World,
yep,
now are footing the bill for things that Disney and the state were previously footing the bill for.
Yeah. And and it's like so mean-spirited what DeSantis is doing. He's going to have now the state inspect the monorails. The monorails at Disney have been running for over 50 years. They do not need state inspection. That will cost money, training, time. It will annoy the tourists when they shut it down for inspections. It's nothing, but it's just so evil, you know? It's
it's
petty.
It's just flexing their
muscle.
Their muscle. And it's a way to, you know, demonstrate that the state is in control here, not the mouse.
And I don't know the answer to this question, but was there a problem with the monorail?
No, never.
Okay, all right.
Never. But, you know, in theory, you know, if DeSantis had done it smart, he underestimated Iger, I think.
Yeah.
If he had done it smart, what is the problem with having an inspection? Rides, carnival rides, are very dangerous. Another level of inspection is not a bad idea, but it's so evil.
And Iger's tweet would have just gone away,
right?
So Iger tweets, and then there's this hold spiraling upward. But, you know, in the long term, I think that it has been the case that for states that put in really restrictive kind of laws, organizations do not want to go there.
Right.
And in the long term, how many people will want to go to Disney World because how many people will want to go to, I think some people will not want to go to Florida for vacation. So this kind of analysis, if Disney World does it, I think would be great. I mean, what I love about Iger, and by the way, I would much rather vote for him for president than DeSantis.
Hear, hear.
DeSantis. Is I think
funny.
He is
Bob
taking
Iger for president.
Exactly.
Yeah, start a new movement.
I think he's taking all the tools available to them and applying them in a much smarter and savvier way. He's taking the economic structure. He's taking the law.
Yep.
He's taking the media. He's taking public opinion. I mean, this is a guy who's very sophisticated, and he is really doing a great
job
at
this. The move with declawing the Overlook Board that DeSantis put in place was just so fun to watch, even though I do think he's going to end up losing that because it's Florida, so they'll rule in DeSantis' favor. But it was so stealthful and quiet and just amazingly efficient.
It wasn't even reported till several weeks after it happened.
Exactly.
Basically,
he didn't crow about it.
Yeah.
And I want to point out that if Trump had done this, we would all be saying different things. So, you know, just know that these very sophisticated techniques and strategies can be used on all sides.
Right. True. So, again, remember, there are no heroes in here. Both, you have a giant corporation which exploits workers in many exposés. And you have DeSantis. So who are you rooting for here?
But see, when I
the
what
place
I find
that
amazing,
made the Little Mermaid.
I just find I just find it hard to believe that DeSantis is taking on the most powerful economic engine in his state. We keep talking about 75,000 people, right? But when you add those 5 million tourists, they're staying at hotels, they're buying food, they're renting cars. You would have, if Disney just went away tomorrow, which won't happen, but, you know, if it disappeared, you'd literally have unemployment in Florida go up. I forget the number. I read it somewhere, but it's a staggering percentage. It's like 15 to 20%.
It is a global tourist attraction.
Yeah.
It brings people in from every corner of the globe, and they soak them for all they're worth.
Oh, my God.
They do. They are so good at that.
And so now imagine this man becomes president of the United States and is doing the same kind of crap.
It's got to be hurting his donations.
He's going to be. It's going to be. It's going to be things like, you know, just like what the Trump tax plan was carefully designed to punish
the blue states,
and particularly, you know, those of us up here, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, DeSantis. I mean, The targeting of it, the
revenge. I mean,
of
the
it,
motivation. The Rosemary, you just said it's revenge, and that is it's just frightening. That it's so overt.
It just scares
not even
the hell
secret.
Out of me about what the national. You know, imagine that person controlling the U.S. Army, the
resources of the IRS, the resources of the FBI.
And you know what else?
Welcome
this
to China.
This is all for nothing, because nothing's going to come of this.
Right.
Whoever prevails, it's going to be in court for years. DeSantis will be on to the next thing. Disney's not going to move until it's resolved. And then everything will change again. It's going to all amount to nothing.
Yep. And you've done a lot of damage that you have to...
Yeah, for nothing. That
you have to make good on.
And who are the people that are damaged? The people are the people who work in the restaurants and in the hotels around there, who maybe some of them will be laid off because it might decrease a little bit of the traffic that comes there. It's already given it a bad name. I mean, people may just want to not, go somewhere else instead of to Disney World because they just don't like the controversy.
Well, and remember, it's not so much the us going down there with our kids as tourists that have the impact. It's the big conventions, right? The such and such convention has, 20,000 people they bring in for, a
good
week.
Good point. Yeah.
And those are where the businesses have the clouds.
Yeah.
That in Georgia actually made some real significant changes to some of their they're still terrible, but they pulled back a little bit because all these companies said, look, we're headquartered in Atlanta. You do this. You're hurting us because we need to be able to bring these people to our state.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll just start holding our conventions elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And move our headquarters near where our conventions are. And, sort of somebody did the math and said, we can't afford that. And I don't know what other, what other big things are giving Florida that's huge budget, but seems like that's a big part of it. It's very weird.
DeSantis calling Disney a woke Burbank corporation.
Yeah.
Okay, but one of the huge engines of that corporation is located in the state of Florida.
Yeah. But that plays well in Peoria and in Iowa and
Orlando.
Across the Midwest. I mean, it looks like he's taking on the liberals from the coastal states. And, that appeals to a lot of people, and it's about winning support. And it's something he can do that gives him an identity that doesn't require him to take on Trump directly. It can let him, kind of create his own entity and appeal to the same Trump voters without attacking Trump.
I understand exactly what you're saying, but going back to what Jim was talking about, this idea of we're going to pursue new hotel taxes. So we're going to screw the people who come from Peoria to come in and want to go to Disney World. We're going to put tolls on the roads going in and out of Disney World. I just don't understand why in the world. Maybe that's necessary. I don't think it is. But my goodness, why would you mess around with the biggest job creator, money creator that you have in the state of Florida?
You know what? You know what breaks my little idealistic Fran heart is that everything we ever talk about, it's not an absolute, but a lot of things we talk about, it's all about control and elections. Why does somebody make a decision? Because they want to control the way you think about something, or they want to win an election, and it's something that's a strategy for them to optimize their base or whatever. And when we get to this point where governing is all about control and elections, my little idealistic Fran heart is completely broken here. I have to say that.
We're there.
Okay,
we're there. Your heart is broken,
My
Fran.
Heart is broken.
Karen writes, it would be a good idea for Disney to consider moving out of Florida before sea level rises and force it to move.
I've heard that Space Mountain is the highest point in the state of Florida.
Is that right? Oh, God.
75,000 people at the top of a roller coaster.
It's great. Let's see. And we go to this letter who says, I appreciate your discussion about Ron DeSantis, but you need to talk more about the weakness of Biden. I've heard him in the last few days, and the speech is becoming more halting and almost inaudible at times. His brain may be fine, but how is all of this going to play out with the American people?
Well, what's the evidence so far? Is the evidence that they're turning on him? I don't think so.
Well, his poll numbers after he announced re-election, Biden, we're talking about, are terrible. And
re-election now. Yeah, remember that.
But I mean, the number of people who are uneasy about his are not sure about his ability to, you know, to lead. Is that number is growing, and that hurts him, and people do question it. And it's a big theme on Fox News and on the right wing media that President Biden is feeble, they say, and he walks because he's not well, and he's senile, and they say they make all these suggestions, and they show clips of him when he fumbles over words. This is a man who, had
he's
experience stuttering. He was fumbling over words in the 80s
20.
And 90s,
I know,
right?
I know.
And he still is. And now, instead of just saying, "Oh, he's a jerk," he just said something stupid, or he's having trouble because he's stuttering. Now they're saying it's because he has dementia, and there's not really evidence by the way that he's deciding things and his policies or anything that would suggest that. It's just the way his public appearance is. So when you see it and you see a little bit of, inconsistency in the way that he's speaking, you start to think it in the back of your head. And it's a very effective way to hurt somebody.
I'm the bigoted ageist on the group. And I do think that actually both candidates, leading candidates, Trump and Biden, are too old. I wish we had younger, more robust candidates.
Wish schmish doesn't matter.
Well, I know. That said, with the two we have, it is something Biden has to contend with. He does not have the same energy that Trump does. You saw that in that horrible town hall. As bad as he was, he certainly was robust and vital, and Biden just is not. At the same time, he is negotiating right now to stop a global fiscal collapse while Republicans are making the same party, by the way, who defended Ronald Reagan, who clearly was demented. They're now going after him, and it's highly effective, as the polls show. So I hope that the Biden camp is coming up with a way to forecast and to promote what he actually is doing versus what it looks like he's doing because he's, an older man.
I think the Democrats, myself, have been very short-sighted in not promoting a next generation of leadership that one would think about as, potential presidential candidates.
Who you got?
Say that again?
Who you got?
Well,
the fact you can't
part
name
of the
them
reason,
on the tip of your
part
tongue
of
is
the reason that it's hard to figure that out is we have not spent the last few years grooming possible people so we know them, so we think well of them. And I do think I think Biden's doing a really good job. It's possible that he's doing a better job than anyone else because of his experience and his, deep relationships and all of that.
Because of his age.
Well, maybe because of his age, but maybe because of a lot of other things. But I do think that it's dumb not to succession plan, no matter kind of where you are. And you have to get a next generation of people kind of in the media. We all have to feel good about them because then the Democratic Party keeps going on in kind of a natural way. And it's not like, they spring Jim Hendler on us. Jim Hendler will be the next guy. Did we all know Jim Hendler?
No.
President Hendler.
It isn't just the Dems, though. The Republicans have the same problem.
They have Matt Gaetz coming up.
Yeah, Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, like actual contenders they don't have. But the Democrats do. There's Buttigieg, there's Whitmer, there's Newsom.
Right.
There actually is a whole crop of them, but they're
But in order for that
out.
To happen, the current people in power need to recognize that and step aside. Yeah. I mean, it's just the way things are. I mean, when Eisenhower had his heart attack, he was only 65, and people were saying, do we need a president that old? FDR died when he was 63 in office. I mean, today, people are a lot healthier, a lot longer. And have proven that they can perform well into the 90s many times. Not everybody, but many times. So it's fuzzy now.
I agree. And, you know, I think the I think a lot of what's going on both sides, right, is Biden is looking at Trump as the person who's going to be put up. Trump is looking at Biden. I mean, the minute one or the other of those guys had really serious contention, had a real chance of it changing, I think you'd see people on either side coming out of the woodwork if suddenly it wasn't against Trump or if suddenly it wasn't against Biden. I think the Democrats see Biden as right now the only guy who can beat Trump because he's done it. If you look at the numbers, I mean, we talk about his polling not being very good. His poll numbers at the moment in time are exactly the same as Trump's were at this moment in time in 2020. So,
but it's an ecosystem. We have not been taking the longer path of promoting other Democrats, so you would think of them as people with high poll
numbers.
That's
right, and we haven't done a good job of state houses, and we haven't, you know. Where's the governor who is the equivalent to DeSantis in a blue state? We used to have one. Well,
yeah.
Although we're not getting the same kind of national.
Phil Scott in New Jersey.
You're not seeing the same kind of.
Yeah. No, sorry.
Christy Todd Whitmer.
No, yeah.
But dare I say it? As much as it was one of the worst people in the world. I mean, look at how Cuomo would have been playing against DeSantis.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Look at how
he'd be inviting Disney to open in Orange County, New
York.
Yeah.
I mean he'd be, you know,
next to Legoland.
Next to Legoland.
You know, I just don't see the Democratic governors getting the same kind of play.
I see we need to take a break, so we'll do that and we'll come back with our group right after this. I think if we've learned anything, ladies and gentlemen, it is that Tuesdays can be manic, too. That's not the only day, Manic Monday. Yeah. Anybody know who wrote Manic Monday? Anybody?
No.
Anybody?
Oh, I love these questions.
I have no idea.
Prince.
Really?
Prince wrote Manic Monday.
Isn't this some Prince anniversary today?
Oh, I don't know that.
I thought I was listening to the radio. I was listening to WAMC coming here, and I thought that's what.
Well, I will check that out. But okay. All right. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. Our final segment together with this amazing panel, and we thank you for being with us. I would like to. I do want to get to the tech stories because we have techie people here, and I don't want to fritter away the opportunity to talk to them about stuff that they know so much about. I would like to just for a moment ponder, just to reflect on the fact that somebody walked into a congressman's office with a bat, and. That's where we are right now. The congressman is Gerald Connolly, a Democrat, and a man walked into his office and wanted to speak with the congressman who was not there. And at that point, they went on a rampage and injured two staff aides. A 49-year-old man was facing charges for one count of felony aggravated malicious wounding and one count of malicious wounding. According to Fairfax City Police, he was being held without bond. So,
you know, Joe, I interned in the Congress many years ago, and I got to tell you, there were a lot of crazy things that were going on. People were really, it attracted all kinds of people who had maliciousness in their souls, in their hearts, and it wasn't pretty.
And two important details about this. Number one, they already knew that this guy maybe wasn't okay because he had brought suit against the CIA for torturing him from the fourth dimension. Maybe this was possible, but I think most of us would doubt that. And second of all, it was the district office, so there was probably not the same kind of metal detectors and stuff that one would find in the congressional office. The good question is, like, both of those things could have been tinkered with. There could have been metal detectors, and why aren't we paying more attention to this guy?
Great point. All right. Now, let's talk about television and which I think this is a great headline that the New York Times used. TV's war with the robots is already here.
The tech people are rolling their eyes.
Yes. Who wants to? Who would like to begin in talking about TV's war? Because as you know.
I'm looking at Jim. Jim is looking at me.
Mike's looking at the two of you like a tennis match is going on. But yeah, I find it here's what we know. The TV writers are on strike. One of many issues at stake here is AI and what can be done by a robot. What can be done using artificial intelligence that would, quote unquote, replace a television writer. So, Fran.
Oh, God, everybody's looking at me. Well, what I find really interesting about this article is the fact that it's representative of all the things we're worried about and in AI land, which is, will AI take over my job and what happens when it does? And so now the writers have a little taste of that. The writers are on strike. If we want to keep watching TV and all its various qualities, can you get AI to do it? And let me remind us that the last time, or one of the last times the writers were on strike, you got reality TV. So now you're eating bugs on an island, or you're having sex with people you never met, or, you know, God knows what is happening on these shows.
Or both at the same time.
Or both at the same time.
I missed that one.
And so sex if you think you about AI-generated TV, is it higher quality than that? Probably not.
Well, so.
But yeah, the standards are low.
Well, the standards are pretty low.
Standards are very low.
But these are real issues. Well, and I think for the writers, they do not want AI replacing them. And for the people making the shows, they would like to have that option. So there's this whole guardrail thing. I'm sorry, Jim. I interrupted you.
I'm sorry. I keep trying to interrupt
you. Everybody seems sorry.
Well, here's the thing. I think this whole story, you'll forgive me, is stupid. And it's stupid in the following sense. The producers are saying, oh, we'll just use AI. We won't need writers. If you've read what AI can do, and if even if you project it out a few years, it's a productivity tool for creative people. It's not a creative person.
Right.
Right. It won't write good AI. It won't write good
but
TV
a lot of
scripts.
Bad scripts
and
make it to the
well,
yeah,
screen.
Yeah, but boring. I mean, it's not that it's quote bad unquote. It's that it's boring. You wouldn't watch the TV show.
So let me ask.
And then you know, so what we're really talking about is an automation. So we're focusing. Fran had the right questions. You know, what jobs? How's it going to impact? But this particular thing is just because suddenly we have something that can write things. AI's been writing stories in newspapers, online, et cetera, for 10 years now.
But right? So mean, let's use this as an example. Yeah. The WGA, the Writers Guild of America, denied the request for the Tony Awards to go on. And they're not allowed to use to go on for the Tony Awards. Now, And please, whoever, if anyone is out there who has written this material, but the people who write the pablum that is those introductions to award shows, good God! So AI could do that.
Yeah, I mean, the
could
question
it do it
is,
amusingly? I don't know.
I think
well,
one
none
of
that's
real,
amusing.
One of the real questions we have to deal with is when is AI good enough? So right. I just bought a new vacuum cleaner for my lovely apartment in Northampton, Massachusetts.
Yes.
And I don't care if AI wrote the instructions, as long as somebody vetted it to make sure that my vacuum won't blow up on me because ChatGPT just went rogue.
Did you get one of those Roomba things?
No, I got one of these, like,
Dyson?
Oh, my God.
That's
well,
yeah.
You know, my son and his wife had one, so, you know, okay. They said, right. Mom, you need one, too.
All right.
But, you know, I don't care if AI writes that. Is AI ever going to win the Nobel Prize in literature? It is not. And so our question as a society is, you know, how do we master it to be good for us rather than make us at risk? And when is just the AI good enough? And I think those are not questions that, in general, we're asking. You know, we read these newspaper articles all the time. And it said, oh, an AI got an MBA at Wharton, or, you know, an AI, you know, tried to convince me to leave my wife and what, you know, like partner with my computer.
Or one in chess,
you know, these are dumb things. But I think the real question is, how are we going to use it? How much transparency are we going to need? So let me just, like, go off on a rail.
Go.
And Jim can hook me.
You have 5 minutes.
I think that there are three easy things that Congress can do. First of all, it can require that we actually know it's AI when it's AI. So we don't know that. You know, if I look at a picture and it's the, you know, Pope in a swimsuit issue or the puffer jacket, it's like, it would be nice if somebody said, this is a deep fake, friend. This is not the actual Pope.
Right.
You know, if there's something you read, it would be nice to know that. Number two, at least with the version of ChatGPT a lot of people have, there are no citations. You don't know where the information came from. So imagine the AI was a person named Bob. And when Bob tells you something, you think, oh, that's more true or that's less true, right? We don't know. There is no Bob name on ChatGPT that allows us to vet it. And the third thing is the government has to get a lot better at understanding what's going on.
Yes.
And they used to have the Office of Technology Assessment. They used to have people in agencies. They don't have those folks. So they have to ask Sam Altman or somebody from Silicon Valley. And those people are conflicted.
Yes.
So we need people in our government who can help guide us into this crazy new era. I'll shut up now.
Yeah,
that's great. That's really good.
You know, and I agree with all that. I think the thing to understand about some of these emerging technologies is we're talking about tools. We're talking about increasingly more powerful tools, but they're still tools. It's what we do with them that matters. Okay. You know, I got into an argument with someone about this, and I said, look, let's look over at the bio space. Right. Anything powerful enough to cure cancer is going to be powerful enough to do bad things. And the way we do that in medicine is we think about that in terms of laws. We think about that in terms of regulation. We
FDA.
Think about that turn.
Ethics.
Exactly.
And, sometimes
and the
we
thing
don't get
is
there.
The AI stuff is moving so fast that we haven't had a chance to get ahead of it yet.
Right.
But if you actually look at these issues, right, and you just take them on. Just, you know, again, I can do a lot of damage with a hammer, and I can do a lot of good things with a hammer. But nobody says the hammer put me out of business.
Oh, if I had a hammer.
Hammer in the morning because you're not awake in the afternoon and evening.
Where are you, Pete?
Yeah,
but does, seriously, I'm sorry. I'm gonna.
It does seem to me though that the Writers Guild is being pressured by the, you know, the companies and the studios with this. They're using the threat of AI down the road and what potential it may have to kind of, you know, scare them. And then they're also scared themselves. They're worried that they will take over some of the routine tasks that they currently do now and get paid for. This is the writers. But the kind of high-end collaboration, really fine writing that we've seen in television and in TV series and some movies in the last, you know, 10 years, the streaming era. I mean, I can't imagine that AI would be anything more than just a little tool where they say, give me some background on this so I can write it into the script.
Exactly.
You know? AI is not writing success.
We already have,
worked
examples of how AI should be used. Every time you fly in a plane, an AI system is doing most of it. Robotic surgery. And this is AI that's been vetted. Humans are in charge for the unexpected cases. We know how to do that. We have to do that in all the other instances that we use AI.
And you have to do it case by case, just like airlines have one thing, drugs have another thing. Lumping AI into one big pot is just plain wrong.
I have a listener who, Kelly, who writes and says, Fran, you're absolutely right. On this day 1984, Prince released When the Doves Cry.
Whoa!
It's the 50th anniversary.
Not right about anything else.
Fran, a delight to have you in the studio. Thank you very much.
So
we
great.
Can't wait to have you come back. Jim,
woo-hoo.
Rosemary, Mike, thank you very much. Alan, great to see you.
Always good to be here.
We'll
thank
be
you,
back
Joe.
Right after this.